So I'm thinking, are we talking about holistic Holly here? Are we talking about a whole new theme for... It doesn't quite have the beat, I sense, for really doing a Lincoln Cobra Elite dance to, does it, really, Neil Diamond Solid?
It needs to be a bit quicker.
I think so. I think we need, obviously, a high-energy version needs to be sorted out as far as that's concerned. Now, when last we spoke to the genius that was, of course, and is Arthur Weingarten, to be precise, we were talking about all sorts of other things. We were talking about Man from U.N.C.L.E.
The Addams Family. Wonder Woman. The Green Hornet. Bonanza. Murder, She Wrote. The Mod Squad. Honey West. Ironside. Just some of the series which have benefited from the writing and producing genius of Arthur Weingarten. And now the legendary writer is live on the Midweek Drive. Prepare to be amazed.
Quite rightly so, too. How are you, Arthur?
I'm well, thank you.
Excellent. As I say, I know we were thinking about the United Network Command for Law and Enforcement. I've just received notification from a well-known internet firm that my copy of the first part of The Girl from U.N.C.L.E. is on its way. But astonishingly, Arthur, I've been pressing a little button earlier in the part of the programme to kind of epitomise what was happening last week on the show, and as yet nobody's identified...
Forward with the side snake. Oh, looks good. Roger. I've got a blowout. Aim for three. Get your pitch to zero. Pitch is out. I can't hold altitude.
Direction Alpha.
Yeah, pretty much the theme of last week's Midweek Drive in many ways. But, you know, we managed to get it together. Arthur, you can surely identify those opening exciting scenes from the crash by that chap who actually went on to actually deal in a two-part episode written by yourself entitled Sharks.
That I got a residual last month for that two-part episode, which apparently over the years has been turned into a feature and shown not just on television but in the cinemas. And I hold on, wait for this one. I got a residual of 5 cents.
Lay, you see, every little helps. I like
from
to feel
Malaysia.
Oh, it's great. Let's just have a little... Because, I mean, I still... Malcolm, have you identified the series as yet?
I haven't. Can you give me any more clues?
Is it a clue? Holly? No, and, no?
Certainly not.
Okay.
Steve Austin, astronaut. A man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man.
And better than he was before. In many ways.
Better. Stronger. Faster.
As I said on the Jeff Thompson and Ian Mills show this very morning, it's exactly what we do with Midweek Drive. We crash out of all sorts of things. We have a major disaster. We come back better, fitter, faster, stronger. Bring it on. Of course, Arthur, is the theme to which classic series?
It's The Bionic Man.
The $6 million Man, exactly.
$6 million. Right.
Yes, it's truly wonderful. And what a great two-parter Sharks actually was, because not only did you have a young John Delancey starring in there, went on to be Q in, of course, the Star Trek Next Generation series, but you also had Pamela Hensley. But let's just set the scene, because I can tell, Holly, you're intrigued. You'd like to find out what was the plot line of this Season 5 episode produced by Freddie Freiberger, often known as the show killer. It's unfair, you know. Freddie, he just got onto the last season of the show, and it just seemed to end. Space 1999, Star Trek, $6 Million Man. I'm sure it wasn't his fault, Arthur.
Remembered for things like that.
Well, I knew actors who, once Fred Freiberger was becoming the main producer on it, they might as well have packed in there and then, really. It's frightening. You know, Catherine Schell, when Freiberger took over from Gerry Anderson, the last series of Space 1999, it's finished. They're done and dusted. Anyway.
You know what you bring to mind? I have to say this. Did you ever see, or has anyone there ever seen, a movie called The Cooler with William Macy? And what the premise is very quickly is that he is a man who brings doom and gloom wherever he goes, and he has been hired by a casino in Las Vegas. Whenever they get someone with a winning streak, the cooler sits next to him, and they start losing immediately.
I mean, did you work with him? Because I noticed, actually, you get full credit, full writer's credit for the first part of Sharks, and then he takes over as teleplay by Fred Freiberg for the second part.
Yes, that's because I had to go off to England and do some work there, and so I could not finish it, yeah.
Many of our Lincoln folk find it very difficult to go to England as well. It's a different part of the world, and I don't know. But that's for another debating time, etc. Would you like to just set the plot line for what Sharks was about? Because, I mean, I think, is it about Jaws? Is it about, you know, is it about sort of man-eating, flesh-eating things? You know, is it about Steve Austin pushing, I tell you, pushing a nuclear submarine? That's astounding. Is it about a scientist who's been put to one side because his research has been just let to go, and he decides to get his daughter on the case to control those sharks? Share with us, Arthur, what do you remember of Sharks?
I remember absolutely nothing.
Brilliant. I knew we should have prepped. We should have prepped. I was like, next month, the girl from Uncle.
You are the eternal hoper. I don't remember what happened yesterday, much less back then.
Well, never mind. That's the but I think, you know, we must get hold of another copy of Sharks and send it over to you, because it was, you know, it certainly brightened my routine. You, Malcolm, you recognise $6 Million Man. I take it you weren't a fan.
It was okay. I always thought it just went on a little bit too long.
Only
five seasons.
A few movies.
Yes, but. Yes, I did enjoy watching it, yes, because I am of that era, I must admit.
Did you do a lot of stuff in slow motion and go...
I could do if you like.
That's very good. And indeed, obviously, Kung Fu, another series which had a lot of slow motion activity in its own routine. Ed, does that kind of whet your appetite to actually say, I must check out Sharks?
Yeah, and also The Cooler.
And The Cooler,
yes.
Oh, The Cooler, you must, seriously. It is just with Alec Baldwin in the lead role, and just absolutely wonderful independent movie with a brilliant Bill Macy. If you know his work, this is at the top of it. If you don't, you really owe it to yourself to look into this fellow. Wonderful actor.
Have we lost this sense of heroes in our TV series these days, Arthur? Or is it something, well, it's cyclical, it'll come round again? Because really, in the 1970s, The $6 Million Man was probably one of a whole clutch of shows, many of which you wrote for, Wonder Woman, Bionic Woman, obviously being from the same sort of stable, where you had clearly identified heroes. Do we have that these days, or do you think, no, things have changed?
I don't think so. And I am the last one you should ask, because I don't watch the television episodic series, but... today, and haven't for a good number of years. But what I do know from what I see in the lift scenes for the series that are on or read about is coexistent with the world today. We are, excuse me, a shared experience society. The hero is yesterday's idea. It's CSI and it's this. It's teams that do things. It's like Facebook, I would imagine. You share everything with everybody, and I do find it actually just amazing that the individual hero, that concept that goes back to the dark cave days and sitting around the campfire and telling mythic stories, is gone. Seems to be gone.
That's interesting. Congratulations.
And I think it's gone in feature films as well.
I'm not sure I agree with that. I think Joss Whedon with the Avengers and the Marvel Universe, I think, is probably putting that to right. Must congratulate Penny Evans. She was right. $6 Million Man, straight in there. No messing about whatsoever. Although, sadly, she says she doesn't like Thunderbirds. She's going to enjoy Shane Rimmer with Scott voice of Scott Tracy tomorrow. He went over to Japan and was treated like royalty recently, did Shane? Anyway, he's back with us tomorrow. So... Holly, any questions for Arthur about life, the universe, or indeed, you know, the role of the cheerleader in some of his productions?
I don't know, they really should have a cheerleading hero, shouldn't they?
Well, we did, of course, have a cheerleader who was in Heroes, played by Hayden Panettiere, who now stars in Nashville.
I never watched that, though.
Well, Hayden Panettiere, Cynthia Holly Cox lookalike, but that's, you know, part
of the maybe.
Yeah, exactly. From your own point of view, Malcolm, do you sort of miss the hero? Because, I mean, as we'll find out, this is one for you, actually, Arthur. As you know, Annette Andre will be joining us in a few moments. Top Soul, starred many times with Roger Moore, Persuaders and The Saints. Young Malcolm Thompson actually starred as perhaps cameo.
I think you've got that slightly wrong.
What happened?
There,
what happened with yourself and Roger Moore, Malcolm?
This is years and years ago. I was in Trafalgar Square taking some photographs, and this gentleman came up behind me, tapped me on the shoulder, and excuse me, awfully posh as he was, Roger Moore.
Was he?
Yes. Oh. And he said, "Could I borrow your exposure meter, old boy?" This was in the day. Can you remember the old exposure meter with the cameras? I said yes.
It's not a euphemism, listener, don't worry.
And I lent him my exposure meter, and he said, "Well, we're doing an episode of The Saint here. Yeah. We're recording it. Would you like to just stand there and pretend you're taking photographs in the background?" Yeah. So that was my role in The Saint, and it was in black and white, so you do know how...
First two series.
Correct.
Series 3 and 4 were coming.
Oh, well, you're very good. Yeah, okay, fine.
Yes, but you realize you're archival. You are there for all time.
Yes.
Yes.
I've always said Malcolm Thompson when I first heard his show on Lincoln City Radio. I said, "That's archival." But,
you know, never listen to it again.
No. Extraordinary. So I've got to ask the question, Arthur. Did you ever sort of write in a script, "Ooh, can I borrow your exposure meter, sir?"
And let me just say one thing, Malcolm. You probably are unaware of how lucky you are if you like that you were in that episode, because in America, the union would have shut down the production if they had to
Absolutely.
Do anything.
Immediate.
You mean you can't even just stand
no.
there? Oh, right.
No. You cannot be in the shot. Yeah. You cannot, unless you hold the union card.
I am honoured that I was actually in this country when that happened then, aren't I?
Well, that country is civilised.
Oh, don't think we'll go down that path.
ITC carried through in the whole routine. So much to pack into the show, Arthur, and we have Annette Andre's letter from upstate New York all set and ready to go. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic chat with us today, Arthur Weingarten?
I have, as always. Yes.
Excellent. Is Annette Andre set and ready to go? Is the queue ready?
I am. I'm right here.
Right. Well, we'll press this button, Annette.
Annette Andre, ace actress and top correspondent, now live on the Midweek Drive with another audio letter from upstate New York.
And as we say, farewell. Au revoir, really, because Arthur will be back with us for a slightly longer period next time. Girl from Uncle, definitely Girl from Uncle next time around. Annette, did you catch that little Roger Moore story with respect to Malcolm Thompson?
I've been here listening to the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, there we are. I'm not sure whether you would actually remember, Malcolm. Do you remember the title of the episode, Malcolm?
I can't. I wish I could. It's something about escaped prisoners and something about they were trying to get somebody out of prison, if I remember rightly.
Right. That could actually narrow it down to about 12, at least.
It is, but you say the first two series were in black and white, so that could be it, couldn't it?
Yeah. I would have thought so. Okay. Annette, share with us, what delightful topic have you brought from us today from upstate New York?
Okay. Hello, are you there?
Yes, we haven't left you, Annette. We were just having a pregnant pause there, just to kind of, you know, set the tension. You know, get that old excitement going. It's all right. The floor is now yours.
Thanks. It's whatever happened to Once Upon a Time. I don't know about you, but lately, along with the mass disappearance of bees, butterflies, and basic manners, I've become aware of an acute shrinkage in films and on television of what I call the once-upon-a-time genre of storytelling. Perhaps my alarm sounded because of the recent book purchases I've been making with provocative titles such as Ants Wear Underpants and Snail Brings the Mail, which have been posted to my two young grandchildren in London. And they're of an age when the magical words once-upon-a-time still has the power of making bedtime less traumatic and opens the doors to wondrous dreams. Although the same stories demanded to be read night after night may drive mummies and daddies to visions of infanticide. So, what perverse chemistry goes into overdrive when we reach adulthood and once upon a time segues into an evening of telly watching grossly overweight contestants competing to lose enough calories to feed Denmark. Recent films like Argo and TV series such as Law and Order are little more than visual renderings of news events. Of course, since their invention, films, radio, and TV has offered fact-based entertainment, but it seems to me that there's an unhealthy imbalance today, with fact outweighing fiction, and I fear its adverse effects on this future, on this and future generations. At this point, some of you may be wondering, well, so what's the big deal? Why should it matter whether a story is true or not, so long as it's good? Well, let me answer with, of all things, a true story out of my distant past. I'd been invited to a press association dinner in honor of a retiring foreign correspondent, revered for his decades of headline-making scoops. Instead of a speech outlining his many years of writing to deadlines, he opted to recount a story from his World War II days. In 1944, he told us, he accompanied Winston Churchill on a secret visit to President Roosevelt in Washington. One night, sleep evaded Churchill in his White House quarters, and he was reading when the phone rang. It was Roosevelt who'd seen the Prime Minister's light on, and sleepless himself, wondered if Winnie was up for a boys' night out. Soon, the two leaders of the free world were bundled in the rear of the presidential limo, Roosevelt, crippled by polio, ensconced in a wheelchair as they drove through the deserted Washington streets. "Well, is there something particular you'd like to see?" Roosevelt asked. "Well, actually, I've never been to the Lincoln Memorial," Churchill said. "But I imagine you've been many times." The president laughed and shook his head. "No, not once," he confessed. "Too many steps, and stuck in this damn wheelchair, I'd make a pretty sight being hauled up to the top." "Well then, now's the perfect time," Churchill countered. "There's no one around to see us." And so, Roosevelt, in his wheelchair, was lifted up to the top of the monument by his Secret Service agents, and in the still of the night, these two aging warriors looked up at the statue of Lincoln, bathed in a soft moonlight. Churchill turned to say something to his companion when he saw tears rolling down the president's cheeks. And then he too felt his eyes brimming. "It was an historic moment any reporter would give his eye teeth for," the journalist said, "and one that had gone unrecorded until that night," he concluded. The banquet room was pin-drop silent for what seemed an eternity, and then a thunderous applause erupted. A single voice called out, "That's the most incredible story. Why the hell didn't you print it?" The journalist scanned the audience with a rueful smile and then said, "Because it never happened, but I wish it had." And that's the damn trouble with the news. You're stuck with what is, not with what could be. Well, I came away from that evening so many years ago with a clearer understanding of the complex differences between fact and fiction. In a nutshell, the truth can deliver you to the front door, but your imagination carries the key to open that door and let you explore the rooms inside, and the secrets, joys, sorrows, and perspectives of its occupants. Where a show like Big Brother can make you avoid for an hour that the rent is due, The Sopranos, like Hamlet, haunts you with questions that deepen and enrich our lives. When I was growing up, there were almost no films produced for children, except, of course, cartoons. We went to the cinema and saw the films our parents saw, the comedies, dramas, and swashbucklers that filled our heads with the wonders of what was and the possibilities of what tomorrow could bring. In today's world, where the communication of thought is transmitted in 140-character bursts, where dining out becomes a photo op of your meal to post on your Facebook page, When a video of a fat young man doing an impression of a horse dancing is viewed by millions over and over, a very large flag is being waved over our heads, a warning that skating on the surface of our lives is making us immune to independent thought and the ability to grasp, as that 60s song wondered, what's it all about, Alfie?
Nice line. Very good, Annette. Spot on as ever. I feel as though we've gone zen-like. It was like a trance in the studio here as we were all rapt by attention there. A superlative number. Brilliant. And we've had lots of conversation on Facebook. People have even been talking about the strength of their coffee, which just shows how inspiring one of these audio letters can actually be. It's wonderful. Anyway, moving on. Very quickly, have you got any questions you want to put to Annette Andre Malcolm?
It was interesting hearing what she was saying there about all these various things. I don't know an awful lot about you. How long have you been involved in the entertainment industry?
That's not a nice question to ask a young lady.
Giving my age
exactly.
Without giving it, I'm not asking for your age.
His first question, Annette, for Holly Cox was, how old are you then, love? You know, I mean, please. You know, it's honestly, Malcolm, please. Is this what happened to the banking industry?
It did, yes.
Annette has straddled a few decades of quality.
Yes. Right, okay.
I'll answer for you, Annette. I mean, I'll step into that perspective there. But you're almost a child actress when you started working with Roger Moore. Let's face it. So there we are.
Started when I was 4 years old.
Exactly.
Malcolm, that I was in a couple of those black and white episodes.
Exactly.
You weren't the young lady that was actually involved in Trafalgar Square, were you then? Because there was a young lady there.
I have no idea. I can't remember. Yeah.
We'll set our researchers on that case, I'm sure, and get that done and dusted. And so much to pack in to the production. I don't know. Did you get an answer to the question?
I have gathered. Thank you very much indeed. Yes. So I don't normally ask ladies their age, but I didn't. Right. I said, how long have you been involved in the entertainment industry? Slightly different.
Yeah, honestly, you know, she is married to Arthur Weingarten, you know, and send the boys across.
I'm worried.
Holly, last two questions for Annette Andre, please.
Annette, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
The words are there, just need to organise the order a little bit, really. That's great.
It's because I was just reading.
I was trying to help and it put you off, didn't it?
Yeah.
I'll smack my wrist there. I'm chastised.
Has it been okay for your good self today, Annette?
Yes.
Good. And of course, don't forget... We seem to be having a couple of bits and pieces kept dropping out of the line there, but the good news is Once Upon a Time as a TV series is, of course, going into its second season, probably third season now, but that's all about an updated version of Snow White and a whole range of other sort of activities, which is a different line entirely. So, can we look forward to welcoming you back to the show in September, Annette Andre?
Hope so. Gosh, it is getting late in the year again, isn't it? Where did it go?
As you over the pond would say, the fall. And Arthur Weingarten will return as well. Arthur Weingarten and Andre back with us. Time for another Australian songstress.